Good morning. I'd like to call the California Coastal Commission to order and begin with Ms. Miller. Would you call the roll, please?
Commissioner Blank. Commissioner Bochco.
Commissioner Bochco, are you here?
Here.
Commissioner Brennan.
Present.
Commissioner Kinsey. Commissioner McClure.
Here.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Here.
Commissioner Stone.
Here.
Commissioner Zimmer.
Here.
Chair Schellenberger.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Now, staff, do you want to walk us through the changes in the agenda?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. Good morning, commissioners, members of the public. If you'd like to speak to the commission today, please fill out a speaker slip. They're outside the hearing room. Please be sure to put your name and item number on the speaker slip and bring it to the staff table. Chair Schellenberger will call your name prior to the item being heard. We also ask that all cell phones be turned off while in the hearing room, as well as any handheld devices. They do interfere with our webcasting. And turning to the changes on today's agenda, on page 10, there are no changes. And on page 11, item 10A, the Getz appeal is postponed. And item 12A, the Allison Zonker amendment, staff would like to move to consent. On page 12, item 12B, the Solana Beach Presbyterian Church amendment, and item 12C, the San Diego Joint Powers Authority 22nd Ag District amendment. Staff would like to move to consent. And that concludes today's changes.
Thank you very much. And then we did trail statewide from reports from Wednesday, and we'll take that at the end of the agenda. So we'll begin with public comment. And this is a time for the public to comment to the commissioner for any issue which is not currently before us. And you will each have 3 minutes, but I'd like to begin with asking our IT folks to give us a little coaching on how to be sure we make an appropriate record here.
Good morning, everyone. As you come up to the podium and speak, please make sure the microphone is pointed at your mouth. Okay? If you put it down here, we won't hear you. If you put it up here, we won't hear you. If you talk past it, we won't hear you. And if you get way close, it will distort and we won't understand what you're saying. So give it about 6 inches. Commissioner, staff, that goes for you too. And have a good meeting.
Thank you very much. So we'll start with Dan Matlock, and then Catherine Rhodes, and then Dustin Fuller. And if you could move forward when I call your name so you're ready to take the mic, that would be great. And everybody needs to state their name for the record, even though I've called it.
Chair Schellenberger, commissioners, for the record, my name is Dan Matlock, a resident of Oceanside. Good morning and welcome to Oceanside. I'm the Vice President of Action for Oceanside, that is, an alliance of citizens to improve Oceanside neighborhoods. We are comprised of 42 neighborhoods. I represent the coastal zone from the harbor to St. Malo Beach. You will be hearing more from Action in the coming months. But today I'm speaking on behalf of my wife and myself. On March 9th of this year, a noted attorney from Coast Law Group, Marco Gonzalez, informed this commission to expect an ongoing series of problems in Oceanside with our LCP. In 1992, the planning director with a master's degree in urban planning failed to send down to the commission an amendment to our LCP for the commission's approval. So we operated for 22 years under a flawed LCP. Because of the lack of proper implementation of our LCP, corruption by some architects, civil engineers, and developers is alive and well in Oceanside. Outright contempt for the California Coastal Commission and its authority is exhibited by some so-called professionals and elected officials. If the prevailing attitude continues unchecked, it will foster numerous ill-conceived projects at the hands of those who would attempt to cheat the system. More often than not, the planning department turns a blind eye to corrupt conduct regarding the interpretation and implementation of our LCP. To date, we have 7 properties over height under our flawed LCP. I urge staff and the commission to invoke the provisions of Section 30519.5 for the periodic review of our certified LCP. There is no doubt this would, in the long run, save the commission and all interested parties hundreds of thousands of dollars in man hours on appeals. At the present time, there are 22 projects in the pipeline, which no doubt will trigger 22 appeals. Thank you very much for your time and attention.
Thank you. Catherine Rhodes.
Hello, Catherine Rhodes from San Diego, and I have a handout here and a presentation. So San Diego leaders refused to analyze an alternative 15-acre site for a multi-purpose NFL stadium and contiguous convention center expansion on state tidelands as an alternative project to the ongoing draft EIR for the 5-acre convention center phase 3 expansion. The reason given by the mayor to reject the idea is that the California Coastal Commission would never allow tidelands to be filled in at San Diego Bay. And then our reply to that is state tidelands would not be filled in, but instead a full reclamation would take place, which would negate the seismic hazard of liquefaction, remove and clean up all the historic toxic sediments, improve public access to our waterfront, and provide a waterproof subterranean structural bathtub foundation for proof of concept. The cistern would capture and clean stormwater and desalinate water in San Diego Bay. All alternative site for a multi-purpose NFL stadium convention and event center should be analyzed as an alternative contiguous convention center space. Since the project is on state lands, we're asking the California Coastal Commission to analyze our idea, and if it's interested in keeping the charges in San Diego, make the city prepare an updated notice of preparation so the alternative can be studied concurrently. And then the next page is our location here on beautiful San Diego Bay. And it would be actually contiguous convention center space. It doesn't cost much more to actually analyze this project. Next page, please. This right here shows the U.S. spoke headline where San Diego has development rights. And of course, the State Lands Commission has final authority. A lot of people believe that the port owns the area, but of course, the people of the state of California own it. Next page, please. And here's just another location where you could see it would be contiguous to the convention center. And the next, please. And a lot of people don't know what contiguous means. Contiguous is really part of the fire code, which means you can't have more than 10-foot horizontal between fire breaks. So that we're still saying contiguous. And then next page, please. And then, so right now, this is where our site is compared to where their planned site is. Their plan is, of course, founded on piles on 5 acres of currently reclaimed tidelands. Next page, please. This right here is a Caltrans seismic hazard maps, where I called the people at for the Navy Broadway complex and then also for the convention center. And the map shows that there's a fault going through the original convention center. And that's the reason why people say we can't have structural cistern foundations or structural foundations in San Diego, because we tried it before with the convention center and we lost, it leaked, and it cost tons of money. Next page, please. And here's kind of my thing that I think it should be. It's kind of like the Sydney Opera House right there on the waterfront, and plus we would have public access around the structure. And next page. And then and the next page, please. And basically, we want water security for San Diego, and we don't have one cistern in San Diego.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dustin Fuller, then Jacqueline Winterer, and then David Johnson.
Good morning, commissioners. Dustin Fuller, senior environmental planner at the Del Mar Fairgrounds. I'm here today to support the Costa Crest Trail at Horse Park, but since I was here, I thought I'd provide a quick little update on direction that you gave to staff back in June to work with the district on some allegations of violations. We've had several, I think, positive discussions with staff, and we look forward to hopefully bringing a resolution to this item to you very soon. I just wanted to give a real quick update.
Thank you very much. Jacqueline Winterer.
Jacqueline Winterer, Madam Chair, members, commissioners. First slide, please. Could I have the first slide? Yes. Very recently, the 22nd Agricultural District Board of Directors adopted a plan for the restoration of the Salt Marsh on the south side of the Del Mar Fairgrounds. This plan is a response to the Army Corps of Engineers Order of Corrective Measures issued to the districts for Clean Water Act violations. Next slide. During one of its reviews, your commission asked that the Phase 1 plan be accompanied with a design for the entire marsh restoration, and you see here the conceptual plan design for Phase 2 to the east side of the Phase 1. Next slide. Unfortunately, the district has imposed a condition to this Phase 2 plan. That condition is that they be authorized to build a parking structure at the northern end of the east lot. This quid pro quo, if accepted by the commission, is a poison pill. In this picture, you see on the south side of the picture the Phase 1 and Phase 2. To the north, you see the location of the proposed parking structure. It is planned as a four-story building and designed to serve the patrons of a 60,000 square foot health club. These two huge structures are some of the remaining controversial features of the district master plan and unlikely to receive approval from your commission. They would also be in the way of an I-5 freeway direct access ramp to the fairgrounds that is under discussion. By putting an impossible condition to the Phase 2 restoration, the district is certain to continue to use the eastern south lot in the foreseeable future. Next slide. This slide shows you all the parking sites around the fairgrounds. Any one of these sites could be used for a parking structure without the implied authorization for the large building mentioned earlier. I hope that the Coastal Commission denies this condition discussed here when the matter comes next on your agenda. And with the 30 seconds left, I would like to support the Coastal Crest Trail on that agenda. Thank you.
Great, thank you. David Johnson, and then after that we're going to go back to the agenda and hear the remaining of public comments at the end of the day.
Yes, I'm David Johnson. I have a presentation. Thank you for your time and consideration. Will someone bring up the presentation? I'm a swimmer. I've been swimming at the La Jolla Waters for 30-some years, and I'm quite interested in this situation. Will this come up automatically? Seal excrement chasing... Okay, this is how we got here. This is why I'm here. The individuals that you're watching here have been harassing me for now since 2006, since I began once again swimming in these waters. The seal... situation has become an overpopulation situation, not a problem with the seals themselves. I enjoy swimming with the seals, and this isn't advancing. Okay. Sorry for this delay. Don't like slowing you guys up from what you do. But I do appreciate you being considerate of an opinion on this situation. There's all kinds of things I could say, but I'd rather keep it to the point so I'm not, you know, giving you more than what you'd want. People call me a seal hater. I'm on YouTube. It's a very, very horrible person.
Actually, we have to... you want to proceed without... We've seen these films several times over the last 2 days.
Is there anything that's going to come forward?
Okay. What I'd like to do then is we will keep your speaker slip and have you first when we go back to public comment at the end of the day. Thank you. So now we will go to the agenda and begin with the North Coast.
Ask Good morning, Madam Chair and Commission. For the North Coast, today we have two emergency permits and one immaterial amendment to report, and we're not aware of any objections to that immaterial amendment.
Any unwillingness with the, for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we concur with your report.
And item 4A under the Deputy Director's report is a certification review, and this is concurrence with the Executive Director's determination that the action of the City of Crescent City accepting certification of LCP Amendment CRC Major 1-1-03 with suggested modifications is legally adequate.
Any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, it's been unanimously concurred with.
And item 5 is the consent calendar, and earlier this morning we recommended moving item 6A to the consent calendar. This is a Department of Fish and Game application to restore habitat for the Oregon silver spot butterfly by manually changing vegetative cover at various parcels throughout the Pacific Shore subdivision. And again, we're not aware of any opposition or objections to this consent item.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes to declare on this? Seeing none.
Move the consent calendar.
Consent calendar has been moved by Commissioner Stone, seconded by Commissioner Kinsey. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, it's been unanimously approved.
So that's you.
Moving on to item 7, it's the Deputy Director's report for the San Diego District. There are two regular waivers to report today, one non-material amendment and two non-material extensions. We have received several letters of comment on the non-material extensions. Staff, this is for demolition of a 12-unit apartment building that spans two blufftop lots in Encinitas, and then there's construction of a single-family residence on each of those lots, so there's two separate permits. And this is on 4th Street in Encinitas. Staff has not identified any changed circumstances that affect the consistency with the Coastal Act, but the letters of comment are related to the existing 12-unit apartment building and the state of that apartment building. Apparently, it has become an attractive nuisance for the community, so the people are wanting it to be demolished. The letters don't identify any changed circumstances, and we feel that granting of the extension would keep the permit valid, and so the applicant can comply with the conditions of approval and pull the permit, then he would have the permit authorization to demolish the structure. So we don't feel that the comments result in any need to change the status of the extension from a non-material, and would recommend that the commission concur with the executive director on all these items.
Any unwillingness for concurrence? Seeing none, we unanimously concur in your report.
Thank you. And item 8 are the items removed from the regular calendar to the consent calendar by staff. We have three items, item 12, A, B, and C. If anyone's here to speak on these items, they should come forward now. These were originally placed on the regular calendar. Staff is moving them to the consent calendar because all of the coastal issues have been resolved through the conditions of approval and are acceptable to the applicant. I will draw your attention to item 12C. That is for the trail segment on the Horse Park property in the San Dieguito River Valley. And the applicants here are the San Dieguito Joint Powers Authority and also the 22nd Ag District. This property is separated from the fairgrounds proper that is across the freeway to the west. We don't think this project raises the same issues or concerns that the commission's had with regard to allowing additional development to occur on the fairgrounds property prior to some of the enforcement actions being resolved. This is for a public access trail segment and is a beneficial project. That concludes my comments.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes on the consent calendar? Seeing none, Commissioner Sanchez.
I move approval of the consent items 12A, B, and C.
It's been moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. On any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we have unanimously approved the consent calendar.
And item 9 are the LCP items for the San Diego District, and Deborah Lee, the district manager, will handle these items today.
Good morning, commissioners. The first LCP item for the San Diego District is item 9A, the City of Encinitas' LCP amendments numbers 2-10A and B. This request involves two unrelated items that each amend the city's certified implementation plan. The first LCP amendment 2-10A would amend the certified downtown Encinitas specific plan to establish a historic preservation overlay zone and thus provide greater flexibility in the permitted uses for designated historic structures to encourage their retention and adaptive reuse. For those of you that aren't familiar with Encinitas, the specific plan area covers about 200 acres of the city's downtown core. Highway 101 and the rail corridors both extend through the planning area. The one coastal issue that staff identified was the potential for priority uses, such as visitor commercial and public recreational uses, could be diminished by the introduction of additional non-priority uses, especially in the city where there is a limited amount of land that's designated and specifically reserved for visitor commercial uses. However, the specific plan, as it was originally certified by the commission, accepted the mixed-use commercial zone concept, including both residential and non-priority uses in the two visitor commercial nodes in the planning area, as well as all along the Highway 101 corridor. It did so because the commission proposed and the city accepted restrictions that would limit the ancillary, non-principal, and residential uses, both in terms of their ground floor occupation and how they were sited into the projects. In this proposal, none of those development restrictions are being amended. Therefore, for any additional uses that would be considered for historic structures, they would still need to conform to those restrictions. And staff also believes that the historic resources in the downtown area serve to enhance the community character and make it more attractive to visitors as well. So we're recommending that the commission accept that amendment as submitted. The second part of the city's request, LCP Amendment 2-10B, revises one subsection of the city's off-street parking regulations to allow valet parking services with or without a charge, subject to the issuance of a minor use permit. Presently, the city's ordinance allows valet parking, but only for free. No charge can be taken for valet parking. It's a unique provision in that most coastal communities don't restrict fees for valet parking, and the commission has not typically limited valet parking fees. The one potential issue that we identified was the use of valet parking in some of the nearshore areas like Restaurant Row and Cardiff, where businesses have deficient parking, and a valet parking fee might provide a disincentive to patrons to utilize it, and thus then they'd park off-site and usurp parking that might otherwise be available to beachgoers. The city's proposed ordinance, though, would require the issuance of a minor use permit. Staff believes that's an appropriate mechanism to ensure that the valet parking operations are going to function properly and will avoid any spillover effects that could adversely affect coastal access. So again, we're recommending approval of this amendment as submitted. The appropriate motion is found on page 4 of your staff report, and unless you have questions, that would conclude our comments.
Thank you very much. Are there any ex partes on this? Seeing none, I will open the public hearing, and the city can come forward. I have Dan Joyce, Amanda Lee, and Lori Winter is here for question
9B.
That's for the, yeah.
So I actually
9B.
Have Lori Winter here for available for questions from the city of Encinitas. So we're back to the commission. Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the commission reject the implementation plan program amendment for the city of Encinitas as submitted and recommend a no vote.
Second.
Been moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, thank you.
Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you.
All right, I just want to point out that this is one of our odd things, that a no vote, the failure of this motion will result in certification of the implementation program plan amendment as submitted. Any unwillingness for a unanimous no vote? Seeing none, commission hereby certifies the implementation program amendment as submitted and adopts the findings set forth in the staff report.
Thank you. Turning to the next item, item F9B is the City of San Diego's LCP amendment, number 3-11, and it would incorporate a new division into its certified implementation plan, which is the Land Development Code, to establish the Voluntary Accessibility Program. The Voluntary Accessibility Program is an incentive program to encourage the incorporation of accessible design elements and features in new residential development to serve persons with disabilities and the aging population. This program would specifically provide incentives in the form of floor area ratio and density bonuses, setback reductions, and increases in lot coverage to encourage more accessibility components in residential development. While the Commission certainly supports these efforts, there are two related concerns presented by the proposed ordinance. For most properties that would utilize these bonuses or incentives, there would be little potential for any public view or coastal resource issue. However, as part of its certified local coastal program, the environmentally sensitive lands, or ESL regulations, were specifically drafted and certified in the city's LCP to address preservation of significant public views, wetlands, other sensitive habitats, floodplains, steep hillsides, beaches, and coastal bluffs. The ESL regulations for the City of San Diego establish public view corridors, wetland buffers, permitted uses on beaches and within sensitive habitats, the geologic setback on coastal bluffs, among other critical development standards. Within the coastal zone and on properties that contain environmentally sensitive lands, staff is therefore concerned that the potential use of these deviations could result in encroachments that would conflict with the city's certified land use plans and these important resource protection measures. Staff is therefore recommending that the Commission first reject the ordinance as submitted and then approve it with a suggested modification that would preclude the granting of any bonus or incentive that would allow development inconsistent with the land use plans and ESL. In our discussions with city staff, they have responded that the ordinance does not provide any specific relief from the ESL regulations, and any proposed deviation within the coastal zone would still need to obtain a coastal development permit and a site development permit should environmentally sensitive lands be involved. Both of those permits invoke discretionary reviews that are indeed rigorous, and the city asserts that no deviation solely to accommodate accessible design could be sustained under those reviews. Within the coastal zone, any deviation to the ESL regulations would require a finding, among others, that no economically viable use could be provided on the site absent the deviation. While staff concurs that the discretionary review processes are rigorous, we also believe that the ESL deviation process should be reserved for the few circumstances when a property is severely constrained and there are few options available to a property owner. Alternatively, the provision of bonuses and incentives in a voluntary program to expand accessible housing opportunities should not seek relief from the ESL standards or certified land use plans. A secondary but related concern is one of legal construction. Staff counsel has indicated that subsequent amendments in a certified implementation plan need to be related back to the principal documents so as not to establish an argument that a specific exception is now being adopted. This issue and the possibility that an exception to the ESL regulations could be asserted is also remedied by the proposed modification. In summary, Commission staff certainly appreciates the city's efforts to expand accessible housing opportunities, and we fully support such programs in the appropriate locations and when all critical coastal access and resource protections are retained. The city asserts that there is no intent to create a possible conflict with the ESL regs. Then we believe there should be no problem with providing such clarity in this ordinance. In your addendum, staff had distributed some revised language for the modification, and at that time, the revised language was still unacceptable to the city. However, based on further discussions, the city and commission staffs have reached consensus on some alternate language. So if you can refer to your addendums, staff would recommend that the modification be adopted as follows. It's on the first page of your San Diego addendum. But I'll read the whole modification into the record. Subsection F would be added to section 145-4003 of the proposed ordinance and read, a bonus or incentive shall not be granted where it would allow development that is inconsistent with the policies in the certified local coastal program land use plan or the allowed uses and development regulations of the environmentally sensitive lands regulations. With this revised language, it is our understanding that the modification is acceptable to the city, and we certainly appreciate the city's efforts to reach a compromise in this matter. Again, our staff recommendation is to first reject the ordinance as submitted and then approve it with this revised language. The two resolutions and motions may be found on page 5 of your staff report, and this would conclude my comments.
Thank you very much. Are there any ex partes on this item? Seeing none, I'll open the public hearing, and this time I'll call the City of San Diego. I have two speaker slips, Amanda Lee and Dan Joyce. How much time would you like?
If I could ask for 5 minutes.
Absolutely. And maybe an additional 3 if there's a need for rebuttal.
Sure.
At the end?
I don't think that will be necessary.
Okay, good.
Deborah
thank
did
you.
An excellent job, and I'm Amanda Lee, Senior Planner with the City of San Diego, but we're requesting that you certify our amendment as submitted because we don't think the additional modification is necessary, and we'll just quickly go through. Accessibility design benefits people of all ages and abilities. It's been 18 months since we adopted this, and we have accessibility advocates that have been working on this for 7 years now. We have modest program incentives that are limited to only what's necessary to provide accessible design, and there's no change to the existing protection of coastal resources. This program is going to achieve accessibility in single dwelling units and duplexes, which are product types that we're not going to get out of the current building code. There's two levels of accessibility. We have a Tier 1 standard and a Tier 2 standard. And basically how the program works is the dwelling units that are voluntarily designed will be rewarded with these modest incentives, Tier 1 being rewarded with more incentives than Tier 2 units. The development as a whole, you have all permit types that apply. The only exemption is for a planned development permit or a variance, and that's specifically for that deviation with this program. Said in another way, you have coastal development with deviations. Right now under the code, you're subject to a coastal development permit, your site development permit if you have any environmentally sensitive resources on the site, and you're subject to a planned development permit or variance for those deviations, which would be a setback deviation, for example. Under this program, if the deviation is only necessary for that incentive, you're still subject to the coastal development permit and all its findings and requirements. You're still subject to the site development permit and all its requirements. But you're not subject to the PDP or variance, which could increase the processing level and cost for the project. That's the reason for that. It's a finite list of incentives, which is a little bit different. And I think when staff was looking at this, they were comparing it to other incentive programs where you had greater flexibility as to what the applicant would ask for. This is a very narrow list, and we came up with this as we went through public review over the 7 years that this was in process. There's no flexibility for an applicant to ask for something that's not on the list, and reasonable accommodations are available if you have a disabled person that needs that greater flexibility, then we would take care of that outside of this program. Again, the incentives do not allow for deviation from a public view corridor, any ESL requirement, or LCP policy. In coming up with the incentives on our finite list, we consider what are the qualities of accessible design. You basically need access into the dwelling unit and access within that primary entry level. So it's incentives that look at how to accommodate a path of travel to the unit and within, which typically you need the wider doorways and hallways. So you can see each of these incentives is limited. Floor area ratio, for example, is limited to 5%. The density bonus, we don't even anticipate being used in the coastal zone because you're talking about needing at least 20 voluntarily accessible single dwelling units to achieve one bonus unit. Again, this is really important. There's no change proposed to our environmentally sensitive lands regulations. There's no change to the coastal development regulations. The only change to the coastal regulations is to exempt from that plan development permit or variance. You'll be very familiar with these. These still apply. There's no encroachment upon existing physical accessways. The development has to enhance or protect public views. There's no adverse effect to ESL, and you have to comply with public access and recreation policies. And again, with this program, you could never deviate from ESL because you have to establish you're being denied economically viable use, and with an incentive program, you just could never substantiate that. With the staff analysis looking in the report, we don't feel that there's evidence of conflict or inadequacy, which is your standard of finding. We think it's kind of a straw argument that one could argue. We get arguments all the time, and it doesn't mean that there's any rational basis for that argument. Our code lists what you can do, and we don't, with each ordinance, repeat what you can't do. You have to comply with ESL and LCP, and we're not modifying the ESL or coastal regulations. So we would respectfully ask that you certify as submitted. And we don't have a problem with the language. Deborah was so nice in working with us. But the problem is the additional time and cost to both of our agencies. And we just feel it's unnecessary to have that repetition. So thank you again for your consideration.
Thank you. Catherine Rhodes.
And I have a presentation also, Catherine Rhodes from Point Loma, or San Diego. Environmentally sensitive lands, what I don't trust the city at all on anything, or CCDC, or the Port of San Diego. And one of the things for environmentally sensitive lands, what they use for steep hillsides, is what they say is, if there's not a natural slope, and as a landscaping term, then you don't have a steep hillside. So if you have like a 100-foot slope, super steep, you can get rid of that slope by planting a flower in the middle of the slope, and then all of a sudden it's not considered natural anymore. That's a really bad thing that San Diego does. Another thing that San Diego does is, you know, people want to buy cheap land on environmentally sensitive lands. They know, you know, they buy it cheap, moves around people, and then they will say, oh no, since we spent so much money on it, now we have a economic reason to force these, you know, condos or whatever they want to put on our land, our environmentally sensitive land that's inside of our community plans. And so the San Diego, in our community plans, environmentally sensitive land regulations in Point Loma are just not even followed. It's very much a joke there. So right here is, according to San Diego and the Superior Court, there are no seismic hazards in San Diego County because the state seismic hazard maps do not exist for the full county. If you could see, it stops at Orange County. So if we could go to the next map. Next slide. And so our solution for all the stuff, thank you for the Navy Broadway complex ruling, especially for the seismic, but so our solution for the active faulting and everything to do with downtown San Diego also is map every fault in the Embarcadero through the North Embarcadero Visionary Plan and the Convention Center area on one consolidated map to be used by the Port, CCDC, California Coastal Commission, the City of San Diego, Seismic Safety Study, the North Embarcadero Visionary Plan, SANGIS, the County of San Diego, the California Geologic Survey, Aguas Prieto Earthquake Hazard Maps, and the USGS. And one of the things that I've tried to get you guys to do is to force San Diego to reconvene the 2006 Caltrans Coronado Tunnel Technical Advisory Panel, consisting of out of San Diego County seismic experts from Caltech and Berkeley, because nobody in San Diego could actually be, I wouldn't trust anything they say. Third, have the TAP make recommendations for subsurface utilities across active faults and liquefiable soils after analyzing the HDPE pipe versus the PVC pipes for areas of liquefaction. And also, one good thing is that San Diego has, I saw two projects being done, small and large diameter high density pipe at Liberty Station and right next to the Port of San Diego buildings where there's massive utility breaks on a constant basis. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Lee, would you like any time for rebuttal or not?
Excuse Excuse me, sorry for that. Those comments didn't seem to be relevant to the project, but I would just reiterate that it's not a matter of just trust. It's our IP that's certified that says in the coastal zone you can't deviate from environmentally sensitive lands regulations unless you can make a determination that economically viable use is being denied. And in an incentive program, you just can't make that case. So we'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Staff? Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I apologize. It was my understanding that based on exchanges with the city that if we modified the modification as we did per their request that they were going to be in agreement. We agree that the city's process are rigorous, but we also believe that the added clarity is essential to assuring that the ESL standards are retained and wouldn't be subject to challenge, maybe not even by, you know, through the city, but in court or by a developer seeking relief. Yes. So we think that because the language is acceptable to them, that the clarity is warranted in the ordinance, we again recommend that you first reject it and then approve it as I read it into the record with the changes requested by the city.
And Madam Chair, if I might just add, I think this is a good example of some of the challenges we face in communication about LCP amendments. And as Deborah indicated, we had thought we had worked out the language here and that we had an acceptable proposal. I just want to comment in terms of the changes that we are recommending. In my experience, any short-run costs that might be involved in taking this proposed modification back to the city and incorporating into the LCP are far outweighed by the long-run potential costs through miscommunication, conflict, misunderstandings, and potential future conflict in front of this commission due to arguments about whether these standards can operate in a certain way or not. So this is, I think, an important clarification in the LCP, and in terms of the cost to the overall public process, definitely warranted. So I just want to make that observation.
Okay. Sorry, we seem to have had a confusion here, and there is another person who wanted to testify. Come forward, and I think that mic goes down. And when you're done testifying, if you would just fill out a speaker slip so we have it on the record. And I apologize for whatever that confusion was.
Okay.
All right.
Accessible. Okay. All right. Good morning. My name is Connie Susi, and I work for Access to Independence in San Diego. And I was one of the advocates who worked on this ordinance. As Amanda said, it's been 7 years in the making. This voluntary accessibility ordinance would provide incentives for builders and developers to increase the availability of accessible housing units. And it's not just for people with disabilities like myself. I have my accessible home. It's not for me. It's not for a small number of us, but it's for all of us who are getting older, who would prefer to age in place rather than face moving or remodeling costs when we no longer are able to negotiate steps or use standard bathrooms. Many of us have retirement savings, but how many of us plan ahead for the type of housing that we may need when we get older? Where will you live when you retire? We have a tsunami of baby boomers, as you know, turning 65, and many disabled vets as a result of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Where will they live? Many of us have friends or relatives who cannot visit or stay with us now because our homes are not accessible. Some people are forced to live in nursing homes after an accident or hospitalization because their homes are not accessible and affordable, and affordable, accessible housing is not available. Access to Independence works with people in that situation every day. We work with a large nursing home in Santee. That's one of the ones we work with. And I just heard a statistic that that 50% of the people in that nursing home, it's a county nursing home, are under, are age 40 or under. So the average age of the resident is 40. Please vote for this volunteer accessibility ordinance today. We cannot afford to postpone this opportunity any longer. Thank you for investing for in your future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And again, I apologize for whatever confusion. Just fill out a speaker slip if you would. As staff, do you have any additional comment?
Just again, we're not taking issue with the standards themselves, and we're just putting in language that clarifies what the city seems to be saying is the case, and that's the interest in clarity for the public and future development proposals.
Okay, thank you. So we'll bring it back to the commission. Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the commission reject the implementation program amendment for the City of San Diego as submitted and recommend a yes vote.
It's been moved by Commissioner Sanchez and seconded by Commissioner Zimmer. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Just briefly, I think that with staff's added language, and I do believe that I do feel that it is important to add at this point, and certainly clears up for all for the future any possible misunderstandings or misuse in future litigation. So I am very thankful that the staff has added that extra layer, and in, at the same time, I believe that this still will further the interest of the City of San Diego and its residents. Thank you.
You. Commissioner Zimmer.
My comments relate to the modification.
Is your mic on?
Sorry. My comments and questions relate to the modification. All right. Thought that would be on the second motion.
All right. Commissioner Bochco.
I guess mine's on the second, too.
Okay. Any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote on this? Commissioner Kinsey.
Yeah, I mean, my questions relate to the whether I want to support this or not. The representative from the City of San Diego described additional processing and administrative burdens. Perhaps I could just ask one question of the staff. Is that a one-time additional administrative burden to modify the ordinance, or is it an ongoing administrative and processing burden that you were describing?
Your name again for the record.
I'm Amanda Lee with the City of San Diego. We've waited 18 months, and now we're being asked to go back to City Council for another hearing.
I think the question, if you could repeat your question, it's a simple, is it a one-time cost or an ongoing cost?
Well, it depends, because we're going to our City Council, and depending on if they agree or not, then we come back to you. So you have multiple hearings, we're paying for multiple noticing, et cetera. That is the concern for something that's not necessary, because our code is clear as to what applies with respect to ESL and Coastal.
Thank you.
Commissioner Bochco.
Yeah, actually, I think my question is very similar to that. So just so I understand, if we vote for staff's recommendation, which would be the next motion, it's just a matter of whether or not the city will accept the added language. So it's not us saying no to the entire amendment.
Yes, it would just go back to the City Council for acceptance
for them,
of
to
this,
either
this
accept the added modification. That's the difference. Okay,
that's
thank
right.
you.
Commissioner Zimmer?
And so if the city's representative could come up again, because I'd like to be clarify the clarification following on Commissioner Kinsey's question. So you're stating that your concern is about the hearing where you have to go back to the City Council to see whether they would accept this modification or not. It would not.
It's not that we have to go back to a hearing. It's the additional costs.
Newspaper
ads, noticing, right. Staff time, paper, all of that.
Of that process.
And you're
not saying that it increases costs or processing time for people who come in for these incentives subsequently?
No.
Okay.
No, it's just out of our budget for the
subsequent
time.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
Is there a need for a roll call vote on this? Seeing none, any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, this motion passes and results in the rejection of the implementation program as submitted and adoption of the findings set forth in the staff report. Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Commission certify the implementation program amendment for the City of San Diego if it is modified as suggested in the staff report and recommend a yes vote.
Moved by Commissioner Sanchez and seconded by Commissioner Zimmer. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Yes, thank you very much. Briefly, Madam Chair, City of San Diego has very, very active City Council members. They are constantly bringing forward motions and changes to their charter, and it's a very, very active City Council. These whatever costs to go back to the City Council and look at this is extremely minor compared to the ongoing changes that the City Council is and the Mayor are constantly proposing. I think that the clarity and to just ensure that we avoid any litigation or any potential for bringing this up in some future by any very creative lawyer on the other side is extremely, extremely important and necessary. So while I appreciate the added one single step to go back or whatever, if it's one or two, I think that what we have here is a critical, important step to ensure the protection of these environmental lands and the LCP. Thank you.
Commissioner Zimmer.
Thank you. As I'm seeing this now, this dispute is not about a standard that we're trying to impose, and it's not about a permit process that we're trying to add that would burden the citizens of San Diego that want to take advantage of this incentive program. And what we're quarreling about is whether city staff has to schedule one hearing in front of the City Council so that the Council can say, yes, we agree, this is the intent. Is that right? Okay. So based on that, I don't feel that this is the kind of disagreement from local government that I would encourage. And I support the motion.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Thank you. I also will support the motion. I want to make sure that we don't lose sight of the actually really exciting and important work that has taken mm-hmm. place here, and I want to commend the city and the folks in the community who have worked tirelessly to get these incentives, and I think it is a model and could be shared with other communities, including my own, and I want to acknowledge that and thank you.
Thank you very much for saying that. Any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote on this? Seeing none, the Commission hereby certifies the implementation program amendment with the suggested modifications and adopts the findings and resolutions set forth in the staff report. Thank you very much. Good work.
Thank you, Commissioners. That brings us to the last LCP item for San Diego today. Item 9C is the City of San Diego LCP Amendment Number 4-11A for community gardens, and B, a set of amendments to the Center City Planning Area. The amendment first involves revisions to the Land Development Code to expand the number of zones where a community garden could be developed by right. The second amendment component affects only, as I said, the Center City Community Planning Area and consists of four separate revisions occurring over the span of 2006, 2007, and 2010. The amendments contain both land use and implementation plan components, and those under our regulations must be acted on within 90 days of filing. Based on those time limits, we would have had to brought the LCP amendment to you today for full review. But our regulations also allow for a time extension of up to 1 year, and we are requesting that you grant that time extension due to insufficient staff time to review the amendment, consult with the city, and prepare a recommendation. So we ask and recommend that the Commission extend the 90-day time period for 1 year on this matter.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes? Seeing none, Commissioner Sanchez?
Thank you, Madam.
I'm sorry, there are. We have a speaker slip. I'm sorry, I'm just moving along way too rapidly here. So we will, are there any ex partes? Seeing none, I'll open the public hearing. Catherine Rhodes.
hello. I guess I just did the wrong presentation where I was trying to talk about the seismic issues. I would say force San Diego to turn in all their fault investigations to the state geologists as required by state law, of course, and the Seismic Hazard Mapping Act. And what that will do is other counties of California have is maps on digital maps where you can know what's going on geotechnically for every project in the county. In San Diego, we don't have that because nobody wants to turn it into the one central database so everybody could have it. So San just has maps that do not match the California Geologic Survey maps, that do not match the USGS maps. And so I would say if you're going to give them a year to do this, because they promised in 2006 that they were going to even change some of their maps in their community plan, that you actually say to them, please turn in all your documentation to the state geologist, and let's update the Point Loma Quadrangle for the Alcus Priolo map so that everybody has the same information and we don't have this five-year fight that I've been fighting. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything from staff? No? Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Commission extend the 90-day time limit to act on the City of San Diego LCP Amendment Number 4-11A and B for 1 year and recommend a yes vote.
Moved by Commissioner Sanchez and seconded by Commissioner Stone. Any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the time extension has been granted.
And that takes us to item 11A. This is permit number 61060, applicants Hager. I'd like to draw your attention to the addendum. There is a minor revision to the staff report and a response from the applicant. And Diana Lilly, the analyst for the project, will be presenting this item.
Thank you. And we do have a PowerPoint for this presentation. The proposed project is construction of an approximately 5,200 square foot gas station, car wash, food mart, and restaurant building. The site is a vacant lot located in the southern portion of the city of Chula Vista between Interstate 5 and San Diego Bay. Thank you. The site is located approximately 400 feet inland of San Diego Bay and the salt ponds associated with the Western Salt Works Company. This area was annexed by the city of Chula Vista from the county many years ago, but has never been incorporated into the city's LCP. The gas station island and canopy, which will be 22 feet high, will be located on the northern portion of the site, with a 40-foot high mini mart and car wash on the southern portion of the site. Staff is recommending approval of the project with special conditions that establish a view corridor over the northern portion of the site and require that the decorative 40-foot high tower element of the mini mart be removed. Currently, there are views of the bay and the salt mountains across the site. The site is here. From the surrounding streets and sidewalks. And some of those existing views will be eliminated by the proposed development. This is a rough outline of the extent of the proposed development. However, almost any development that were to occur on this site would likely block some views. The existing bay views are primarily across the northern portion of the site, and the development has been designed so that the bulk of the structures are located on the southern portion of the lot. Therefore, special condition number 2 establishes a view corridor across the northern portion of the site to preserve the existing views in this area. No additional structures or tall landscaping are permitted within the view corridor. Of greater concern is the tower design of the proposed building. The functional portion of the proposed building extends no higher than 20 feet. However, the building design includes a barn-shaped decorative element and tower on the east side of the building that extends the height of the structure from 20 feet to 40 feet. This slide shows the applicant's representation of the proposed design. The tower element was required by the city of Chula Vista to suggest the form of the nearby historic Western Saltworks building to help offset the loss of views of the Saltworks building resulting from the proposed construction. The Saltworks building is located in this area here, just barely visible. Here's a picture of the Saltworks building, which is located southwest of the subject site and was the inspiration for the tower design. The area surrounding the subject site is currently characterized by a mix of residential, commercial, and industrial uses with quite a number of vacant lots. Most of the existing development in the area south of Palomar Street, which is this area here, is low scale, one or two stories in height. North of Palomar Street is within the city's permit jurisdiction, and the existing LCP allows for heights up to 44 feet, and there is at least one 30-foot high building adjacent to the bay, which is right here. However, even this area here is mostly developed with newer warehouse and retail buildings that are approximately 20 feet in height. Thus, the existing pattern of development for the region is clearly less than 40 feet in height. The proposed tower element of this building is not consistent with the bulk and scale of the community. With the many older buildings and vacant lots, the area south of Palomar Street appears to be ripe for redevelopment. The subject site is one of the first sites to be developed in many years, and the development on this site will establish the pattern for future redevelopment of the region. Given the prime location between I-5 and the bay, the existing bay views in the region, and the existing pattern of development, staff believes the appropriate scale of development on the subject site and the surrounding area is lower profile structures that preserve open sky and water views. If the city of Chula Vista wants to allow exceptions to the general pattern of low profile structures for various architectural features in specific cases, then it should develop land use plan policies for certification by the commission that establish guidelines and parameters for view preservation, bulk and scale, and community character that describe when, where, and what variations from typical height requirements may be permitted. In the absence of these constraints and considerations, allowing a 40-foot high tower would set an adverse precedent for development of the region and could prejudice the ability of the city to adopt a land use plan for the subject area. There are other ways to acknowledge the heritage and history of the region that would not adversely impact the character of the existing community. Therefore, staff is recommending that the tower element of the building be eliminated such that the building is no greater than 20 feet in height. And this concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you very much. Are there any ex partes on this item? Seeing none, I will open the public hearing, and I have two speaker slips for the applicant. How much time would you like?
No more than 5 minutes.
5 minutes, that's great. And I don't believe you need it, but we'll save 2 minutes for rebuttal if you do.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chair, Commissioners. My name is Bob Padoa. I'm the engineer of record for the project, representing Southern California Properties. Present with me is Nick Hagar, the applicant, and my associate, Juan Villasenor. Okay, next. We have broken our presentation in three parts. Basically, the project features, the food mart, car wash, canopy with fuel, the geographical features, and finally, our conclusion. Next slide. On this picture, we show the elevation of the food mart and restaurant. The average height of the food mart itself is 20 feet only. Staff report mentions towers, plural, in several places. It's just only one tower. Approximately size of it's about 15 by 15 square. Next slide. The fuel canopy, about 22 feet in height. This fuel canopy will also have alternative fuels like CNG, E85, and your typical diesel and other gas. Okay, geographical features. As shown in the previous staff presentation, you can see where our proposed 40-foot tower is going to be located at is set far back. There's an existing 40-foot tree right next to it that'd be probably about 20 feet away. So you can see a comparison there as far as the height of our tower by comparing it to the existing tree.
as shown also by staff, that's we went through 3 years of processing with the City of Chula Vista through design review boards, planning commissions, neighborhood work groups. It's been a long and hard process to finally get to this point. So as part of our approval, this was something the City of Chula Vista wanted. Next slide. Surrounding buildings, there's currently the Granger building is 30 foot high. That's about 100 yards away. Right next to our property, there's also a commercial building that's about 30 foot high. And the buildings that, to the north of us are all average about 20 feet high. Next. Surrounding bay views. I mean, I guess it's how you interpret what's the bay view here. Right now, our property is about 8 to 10 feet below the sidewalk grade. So if we do a 20-foot high building, you know, you're talking about having 10 feet above the sidewalk grade. Also, our 40-foot tower, and realistically, it'll only be about 30 feet high from grade. Next slide. Again, presentation. You can see the salt works on the right of it. Next slide. Also, our canopy. Next slide. Okay, this was a City of Chula Vista letter that was written to staff in support of the project. And I'll just read briefly some part of it. The approved height of the tower is not setting a precedent in the general area of the bayfront. The precedent has been set by the existing local coastal program that was certified by the California Coastal Commission in 93. The LCP allows building heights of 44 foot in area north and across the street from the subject site. If the proposed project was proposed for one of the sites across Palomar, the project would be consistent with a certified OCP. Additionally, we're in the light industrial zone, which is a city zone equivalent to the M52 zone, which allows building heights of 45 feet. Another precedent in the area is the height of the saltwork structure. In fact, the proposed project represents an attempt to incorporate building elements that express the history of the area. City staff believes the building tower incorporates and preserves the history and contributes to fulfill the vision of Chula Vista General Plan. Again, we went through two design review boards, two planning commissions, numerous meetings with the local residents, and this is what we came with. Next slide. In conclusion, we have three options for the commission to consider. We'd like our coastal commission to approve our project as presented today. Number two, approve our project as shown with a 35-foot tower, or three, approve our project with a 30-foot tower. Next slide. There's our option one with the 40-foot tower as presented.
Your time is up. Would you like another minute?
Seconds.
I'll give you another minute.
Pardon me? Yeah?
Go ahead.
Okay. Next slide, please. Option two, 35-foot tower. Again, the building will remain at 20 feet. And option three, that would be a 30-foot tower. Okay, last slide, I think. Landscaping plan, just shown as reference. And then last slide. In conclusion, we're here to answer any questions you may have. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Nick Hager. Let me make sure Juan Villasenor is here with you, but to answer questions, is that right? Okay. Nick Hager? Answering questions?
Just
answer. Okay. Great, thank you very much. With that, I'll come back to staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is really more of a planning issue for staff. We feel that this is an area that was annexed to the City of Chula Vista. It's not in their LCP. the portion of the city that's adjacent to the site to the north will be part of a future LCP amendment, and this area should also be incorporated into the LCP. It's an area that's really ripe for redevelopment. We haven't seen any development in this area for quite some time, and as Diana indicated, the majority of the structures in the area do not exceed 20 feet in height. There is one structure that's apparently new and 30 feet. And so our concern is establishing a pattern for redevelopment of the area through a permit rather than through planning, and that we should be first looking at it more on a comprehensive basis and looking at the design standards or guidelines or whatever that the city would want to establish, specifically if they're concerned about these architectural features. And so that's why the staff is recommending that at this time the structure be brought down to the 20-foot height. Because it is an architectural feature, it would seem that in the future, if this is the type of thing that might be acceptable through the LCP process, that it is the kind of thing that could be added to the structure. Just a thought. So again, we thought this was a judgment call for you to make. It's, again, a planning issue for staff. That concludes my comments.
Thank you. Come back to the commission. Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Commission approve Coastal Development Permit Number 6-11-60 pursuant to the staff recommendation and recommend a yes vote.
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I do believe that this is an important view corridor. I do believe that, especially of this bay, that this is the beginning of building redevelopment, and it would be I believe it would be important to have an actual plan of where these kind of structures will be, what views are going to be preserved. Without that, and in light of this being right on the corner, I think that eliminating the decorative architectural piece to maintain the view and allow the community to move forward on the LCP amendment to incorporate this area would be the right thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would only add on to those comments of Commissioner Sanchez. I think it's unfortunate that we get this far down the road, and this, you know, city's pushing for what they believe is local character and memorialize some of the things that are in that area and want to create that. But I think it's important we send a message that they might be able to do it lot less than 40 feet. The views are very important, and the character of a building could be redesigned to maybe have more of a character without going up further. So it is unfortunate it's gotten this far. I would just, maybe if you would indulge me, just a question to staff. In process and working with the city of Chula Vista, were they aware that we probably were going to have some major concerns with this project, and they came forward anyway, or maybe you just describe that a little clearer? Thank you.
Yes, Commissioner, through the chair. Yes, we've talked to the city of Chula Vista about this some time ago. We gave them comments and let them know that we were concerned about the height of the building. There was also a freeway sign involved in the building that we raised concerns about, and the applicant did work with us to remove that sign. But the city of Chula Vista felt strongly about this particular tower element.
Great. Well, I just think our action today will send a message. Thank you.
Commissioner Zimmer.
Thank you. Question, I think, for the applicant, to clarify whether the is the tower intended to be used as a signage facade? Would there be a sign on it indicating?
Yes, I mean, it would serve two purposes.
Your name for the record.
Bob Fedoa, Gary Engineering. Yes, it would serve basically two purposes: to match the historic saltworks architecture and to also, you know, identify the facility as a service station. One thing I'd like to point out is that in order for this facility to survive, 20-foot height would be a serious detriment due to its location being set 8 feet below grade. So
just the one question that the commissioner asked you.
Okay. I hope that answered your question.
Thank you. And for staff, the properties on the other side of the street have a current 40-foot height limit under a certified LCP. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And but you've indicated that the pattern of development to date has been around 20 feet in that area as well. So are there view issues on that side of the street as well?
I think there would be view issues for all of the city of Chula Vista's land area in the coastal zone seaward of I-5 that we'll be addressing in a future LCP amendment. So I can't answer specifically for that particular area, but it is an issue that we're going to want to address in this future LCP amendment. Is the height of structures, view corridors, design elements for anything seaward of Interstate 5 in the city of Chula Vista.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Bochco.
question. Yesterday we had a application where there was a house that had two towers, and I remember in reading that particular staff report, we said that those towers were not equal to the height of the building. How did you guys put it? We don't use those towers to measure the height of the building. We use them as little appurtenances. Or why is this different than that? Could I ask? I don't know if you were part of the, or Charles, you were a part of it.
These guys may want to add based on the facts here, but in that case, those towers were due to accessory features, appurtenances. The elevator, I believe, was one of them.
Yeah, elevator and stair, and they were about 8 feet above the top story.
So it's not atypical to have height exceptions for certain things like that that are necessary in the design review. In this case, I don't believe it doesn't serve that kind of a purpose. It's not an elevator for access to the structure. It's an architectural feature.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would just add that usually those exceptions are for smaller type structures, and we feel that this architectural feature is more substantial than that.
Mm-hmm. What was the dimension again? Do you have it there, of that portion of the building, the tower portion?
We know the tower itself is 20 feet higher than the structure.
No, I know the height. I was just curious about
15 by 15.
15 by 15? Okay, that's big. So the other question I have is, has staff considered any of the other options that they presented in terms of the lowest 30 foot, 35? And does it matter in terms of our LCP future negotiations that this is below grade? Is there a way that factors in so since he is 10 feet below where the views take place, do we take that into account?
We did take that into consideration in our recommendation, and we came up with the 20 feet basically because of the scale of the other existing structures in the area.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any need for a roll call vote here?
I'm going to vote no.
Ms. Miller, would you call the roll, please? The maker and the seconder are both asking for a yes vote.
Commissioner Blank?
Yes.
Blank, yes. Commissioner Bochco?
No.
Bochco, no. Commissioner Brennan?
Yes.
Brennan, yes. Commissioner Kinsey?
No.
Kinsey, no. Commissioner McClure?
No.
McClure, no. Commissioner Sanchez?
Yes.
Sanchez, yes. Commissioner Stone?
Yes.
Stone, yes. Commissioner Zimmer?
No.
Zimmer, no. Chair Schellenberger?
Yes.
Schellenberger, yes. The vote is 5 yes, 4 no.
The commission hereby approves the permit as conditioned and adopts the findings and resolutions set forth in the staff report. Thanks very much. And that takes us to
item 13 A and B. These are the revised findings for the commission's action in July on the Credowitz Amendment. This was for modifications to the vertical access easement on the site in Princess Street in La Jolla. In that action, the commission required the recordation of the vertical access easement upon issuance of the permit, and then also the change that was made is the commission required that the access easement be opened when it's accepted by a public agency and improved, rather than accepting the applicant's proposal to defer the opening of that access easement for sale of the property or when it was no longer occupied by the owners. We feel that the revised findings accurately reflect the Commission's action and the changes that were made at the hearing. I'd like to draw your attention to the addendum. There is a letter from the applicant's agent that is taking issue with the findings and suggesting some revisions to the staff report. We feel that these changes do not reflect the Commission's action or the discussion that occurred at the July meeting, and that it's more of an attempt to introduce new information into the record and is not appropriate at the revised findings stage. Did you want to say anything? That concludes our comments at this time.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes on this? Seeing none, I'll open the public hearing. Sherman Stacy, you have 3 minutes.
Yes, Madam Chairman. Sherman Stacy. I have provided my comments in writing. I disagree that this is the introduction of new information. This is a record that goes back to 2005, and the Commission is aware, and I'm going to focus on three things. And these are three sets of facts that are not in dispute. But the fact that they're not in dispute, they don't get included in the findings because they're inconvenient to the position the Commission took. The first one is that everywhere you talk about the Commission offer to dedicate was not recorded, you do not reflect that it was not only not recorded, it was never made. Saying it was not recorded implies you had some sort of document signed and just failed to record it. But there was never an agreement. Jane Baker, who owned the property in 1979, never signed an offer to dedicate. So it isn't simply the failure to record it. It is the failure to even possess it. California statute of fraud says you got to have a document signed by a party to be charged, and the Commission never had agreement. So you're not simply having the failure to record a document that is your concern. You never received the agreement of the party. And on pages 4, 9, and 10, each time you say a document is not recorded, I think the findings are more accurate to reflect that it was not made, it was not executed, it was not delivered, and it was not recorded. The second issue is that the findings failed to state that the Commission certified the San Diego La Jolla Settlement of the Coastal Program, finding that access at the end of Princess Street will be for emergency lifeguard access only. When the Commission made that certification, it made the findings that that was consistent with the Coastal Act. Today, you have made a decision that says that's not consistent with the Coastal Act, that actual public access is consistent with the Coastal Act. Both things cannot be true. And it's not in dispute that you made those findings. It's not in dispute that that's in the local coastal program. And so I see no reason in your document. It ought not be in the findings. This is your CEQA document. All of the facts are supposed to be available in them, not just the ones that support the decision you make, but even those that might detract from it. The third area that I would ask is that the Commission does not, in the findings, specify that it took no action for 22 years. It does find that it's important that this be opened immediately, but does not make the finding, of which there is again no dispute, that the Commission took no action, made no communication, made no effort to enforce this condition from 1979 until 2001, and that the Commission has no explanation for why it did not do so. I just ask you to say what's not in dispute and put it in the findings. Even though these are not things that you may think support the decision,
thank you very much.
You are obligated.
I appreciate it.
Both facts support and not.
Thank you, Mr. Stacy. With that, we'll go back to staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I believe the points that Mr. Stacy is making were not points that he made at the July meeting. And the point of the revised findings is to reflect the changes that were done by the Commission and any additional discussion that might have been added at that point in time. And we feel that's what the revised findings do.
I agree with the comments made by Ms. Sarb. These were not the points that the commission made in considering the action earlier this year. They were not points that the commission stated in adopting, in making its decision. And if Mr. Stacey would like to put in arguments for his, put in his own legal arguments, there will undoubtedly be a place for him to do that, but not in your findings.
Thank you, staff. Come back to the commission. What's the will of the commission? Actually, in this, yeah, we do a regular motion. Just to remind folks that only those members on the prevailing side, which I believe is everybody here at the dais. Yeah. Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the commission adopt the revised findings in support of the commission's action on July 14, 2011, concerning approval of Coastal Development Permit Amendment Number A-133-79-A5, F6760-A6, and recommend a yes vote.
Been moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Bochco. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, thank you.
Commissioner Bochco, any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, it's been, the findings have been, revised findings have been unanimously approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could, I'd like to just take this opportunity to introduce two of the enforcement interns that have been working in our San Diego office, which has been very fortunate for us because our permanent enforcement person has been out on medical leave for an extended time. So having Abigail May, she's a currently a law student at the University of San Diego, and Alex Lorendi, who has graduated from the Washington University as a law student, working with us has been most helpful, and we appreciate that and wanted to bring it to your attention.
Thank you very much. And speaking for the commission, I know I speak for all the members up here. We also appreciate it very, very much. It's in helping with enforcement is an essential thing. And this commission, it's kind of well known, unfortunately, by almost everybody that we were understaffed with enforcement. And so we very much appreciate your help down in San Diego. So we go to statewide.
Yes, that brings us to the remainder of statewide agenda, and I believe it's item 17, approval of the minutes. And you do have the copy of the minutes, and we are making a clarification in those minutes to indicate that a change was incorporated into the Polshuk.
The Malibu.
The Malibu item in the by the staff at the time of the hearing, and that will be shown in the minutes.
Do I have a motion?
Move the minutes as presented.
Moved by Commissioner Stone, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Any unwillingness for unanimous? Yes. Seeing none, the minutes have been approved, as with including the amendment that Dr. Lester just mentioned.
Item 18 is our commissioner reports.
Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you. I had the fortunate the opportunity to attend with Chair Schellenberger, our Roads Committee meeting. I'm trying to it's the Roads Edge, excuse me, subcommittee meeting. And actually, while we were probably outnumbered in the room, we certainly weren't outgunned in the room. I want to thank that Commissioner Schellenberger and myself, and certainly I want to say it's to Tammy Graves, is that right?
Grove,
thank you. We're present. A lot of hard work had been done, obviously, before we got there, and I think Tammy deserves kudos for being able to take what I think the commission's, what we feel and our impressions about maintaining open space in the visual corridor all along our coastal zone when it comes to structures to Caltrans. And one of the things that I was very impressed with, and I think anybody would, that they're coming out with, it's in a draft copy now, but it's bridge rails and barriers. Now, that might not get a lot of people excited, but it's certainly, if you know, certainly through the area of Big Sur, most of us would all say, boy, if there was an area in this state that you would say that's pristine and just do the least amount you can, but maintain everything, that will be that area. And I think, but the good news is they started there. They've used in some of those, the context of the bridges there and the railings. And that's going to be the opportunity now. It's put in this booklet, which kind of creates a palette for the folks that do designing in other areas. And it's not just in the coastal zone. The good news is some of this has been used up around Lake Tahoe. It's been used even up in around Mono Lake. So it's the idea that what we've sort of created, what'd you say, necessity is the mother of invention, so to speak, but then that's a product that they are able to utilize around the state that can maintain views as we're going by sometimes at 70 miles an hour. Some of the areas I certainly would love to see slow down just so people could enjoy the views, but I think part of it that helped me realizing that while it needs to be visual and you need to see through it, it also has to be structurally safe, and there's liability to make sure the state of California, we as taxpayers, are indemnified against that too. So there's a lot of hard work going on with Caltrans, and I certainly want to commend them for their work. And there was, I want to say it was Region 4, I believe, up in the Marin County area that had actually started some of these visual the barriers and being utilized in Big Sur and certainly around the state. So we'll continue to work on that and in that piece of it. And we also had an opportunity to view some of the coastal improvements and access issues for the HOV 101 improvement project, which this commission heard a few months back in regards to the La Conchita area of North Ventura County. And while we got a chance to give some input, there was a couple surprises that we kept Caltrans aware of and said, I'm not sure this is really what we all, perhaps this commission agreed to, and certainly not what had been talked about on the local level. So hopefully they'll be able to rectify that and we can all be on the same page. But it was a wonderful opportunity, again, to perhaps give the input before it comes to this body and you have to kind of say, no, I don't think that's it, go back to the drawing board. So saving both engineers' staff time and taxpayer money, I think, is a great opportunity. So we'll be meeting again here in the near future, but look forward to those opportunities. Thank you.
Commissioner Blank.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to note to the rest of my fellow commissioners, I seem to remember the chair actually being involved in designing one of the bridges in front of this commission about 5 years ago, and I'm glad she no longer needs to take that role anymore.
I had to put my civil engineering degree to something, yeah.
And thank you, Madam Chair, for letting me go back for 1 second. I did want to point out that the Chair did point out that one of the railings, certainly the color, was probably not appropriate for... she didn't quite use... I mean, was it butt ugly? No. Maybe that was... But it was close...
Dog.
Maybe I was just extrapolating, but it was, and I think that really made me realize the color, when it faded, became not quite what it should have been when it started. And I think it was an aha to Caltrans too, that they needed to look at a bit of not just but a color palette that that would match the areas they were in. And I think that again was sort of an aha for them. And because most of these have been there 40, 50 years, and we're come back and revisiting. It's like what we do. We condition those, and then they stay there for a long, long time. So. I look forward again to being able to give input to them. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Zimmer, you had a report?
I just wanted to let everyone know that a couple weeks ago, at her request, I had a coffee with Shelley Higginbotham, the mayor of Pismo Beach, who wanted to talk with me since I was from her area, and we talked about the League of Cities program to improve communication and working relationships with the Coastal Commission. And found it to be a very productive conversation on both sides.
Thank you. Commissioner Sanchez?
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, a few words again of to welcome you to Oceanside, and also a few words about an issue that is within Oceanside, Carlsbad, Buena Vista Lagoon, and to just give a few words about what's happening there. Oceanside, home of the King of the Missions, San Luis Rey Mission, just a few miles east on 76. It's the third largest city in San Diego County. Chula Vista is the second. That's our rival city over there on the south. And we'll be meeting there when we come back to San Diego. We are 42.5 6.2 square miles, population of about 176,000. Of course, when I grew up here, there were only about 30,000. it's 3.5 miles of beach. We think it's the best beach in San Diego County. Longest wooden pier on the West Coast. We are now host to the second world, they call it the world, largest soccer beach festival. Some people commented on our city hall. Our original city hall that's across the street was built in, before this, was 1934. It was by Irving Gill. And so this city hall, which was built about 1988, was in the style of Irving Gill. Yes, in the old city hall, which was just built in 1934, we have the Oceanside Museum of Art, and there was a recent expansion a few years ago. It kept the Irving Gill style. We are also home of the California Surf Museum on Pierview Way. I don't know if you had a chance to walk towards when you were going back to the hotel to the Wyndham on Pierview Way, but we do hold, and we competed for that name. We wanted to be the only California Surf Museum. So I hope you can stop by and check it out. I don't know, we've got a few surfers, maybe some former surfers. We are in North San Diego County, the home of a few lagoons and wetlands. Very proud of them, and there's several that are being restored. And this is where I get to the Buena Vista Lagoon, which is right between Oceanside and Carlsbad. And the cities of Oceanside and Carlsbad and the Buena Vista Lagoon Foundation are very concerned about the recent termination of the Buena Vista Lagoon Restoration Project and Environmental Impact Report by the California Department of Fish and Game. This is after over $1 million had been invested. Buena Vista Lagoon is an approximately 200-acre freshwater coastal estuary set in North San Diego County between the cities of Oceanside and Carlsbad. It is 90% owned by the California Department of Fish and Game that is tasked with maintaining and managing the lagoon. The remaining 10% of the water and some adjacent lands are privately owned. While there are 29 California estuaries, Buena Vista Lagoon was the first to be designated as an ecological reserve. Due to its surrounding urban setting, the lagoon is subject to sedimentation, sewage spills, overgrowth of invasive species, and eutrophication. It is on the 303D list of impaired water bodies for bacteria, nutrients, and sedimentation. While many of our Southern California lagoons have problems with sediment buildup, this condition is exacerbated at the Buena Vista Lagoon because of a wear at the mouth of the lagoon. Several attempts have been made to preserve and restore the lagoon. In 1981, local citizens and the Buena Vista Lagoon Foundation sponsored a signature gathering effort, took 15,000 signatures to Sacramento, resulting in a dredging of the eastern basin of the lagoon in 1983. About 12 years ago, City of Oceanside proposed a project to widen the mouth of the lagoon and replace the permanent wear with a movable one, which would only be in place for part of the year, part of each year. This project was tabled at the request of the resource agencies, California Department of Fish and Game, California Coastal Commission, California Coastal Conservancy, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, National Marine Fisheries Service, which are basically the working group, as well as some others, as they were initiating studies for a major lagoon restoration project. These resource agencies, the cities of Oceanside and Carlsbad, the Buena Vista Lagoon Foundation, the Buena Vista Audubon Society, many interested citizens and environmental groups worked closely together over the last 5 years towards that project. During this time, many public meetings are held, technical studies were conducted, and hundreds of thousands of taxpayer funds were expended. The Coastal Conservancy and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service provided the bulk of the funding. Three restoration alternatives were analyzed: salt water through tidal flushing, a mix of salt and freshwater regime, and a freshwater alternative. Throughout this process, resource agencies staff stated that an EIR would be produced so that the best solution to the lagoon's problems would be identified based on an objective evaluation of all the available information. In August of 2011, the stakeholders all received an email from the California Department of Fish and Game that this project was being put on hold. Landowners at the mouth of the lagoon have made it clear that a saltwater on tidal flushing alternative may not be acceptable to them. However, failing to move forward leaves the lagoon in a degraded condition. Current estimates that the lagoon will become a marsh in a few years with little or no value for coastal resources. During this same time, Caltrans is undertaking the Interstate 5 widening project and EIR, which would cause significant impacts to Buena Vista Lagoon and other coastal wetlands. Caltrans stating that mitigation money for the I-5 widening habitat impacts could pay for part of the Buena Vista Lagoon restoration project. Preliminary restoration estimates and early engineering studies between $60 and $120 million, depending on the type of restoration regime. Now that this restoration has been suspended, these mitigation dollars are all in jeopardy of being reallocated to other projects, leaving the Buena Vista Lagoon still in a degraded state with no potential funding to do the major restoration that is needed. It's our understanding that all of the engineering studies have been completed for all three alternatives, and that production and public distribution of the EIR is the next step. We understand that the money for this crucial next step is available and has been made available. While there remains much controversy over which is ultimately the best restoration plan for the lagoon, everyone agrees that issuing an EIR will allow all of these issues to be fully evaluated and a lagoon restoration plan to proceed. Furthermore, moving this process forward now is essential to assuring that the funds that could pay for it are not diverted to other projects. Madam Chair, I just wanted to let you know that the cities of Oceanside and Carlsbad and the Buena Vista Lagoon Foundation are working forward to trying to jumpstart this project back. The city's council members were not involved in the process in terms of, you know, working towards moving it forward and not letting it stop because of some meetings with some of the property owners at the mouth of the lagoon. So we are, you know, moving forward. We're working together, and we're hoping that this very precious lagoon will not die, and that it will, in fact, be a restoration project that we'll all be proud of. Thank you.
Anything else under Commissioner Bochco?
Yes, Madam Chair, before we lose a quorum, I just want to make a motion, please, that the state set aside enough money to get Dr. Lester a new sign.
We unfortunately can't take any motions here, but we could pass the hat. We, you know, it was. Thank you.
It's been ordered.
Anything else on the commissioner reports? Seeing none.
Madam Chair, Brian, Commissioner Brennan.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. I had this bookmarked, and I want to just get a reaction from staff. There's the Coastal Habitat it's a workshop. It's Coastal Habitat Conservation in a Changing Climate, Strategies and Tools for Southern California. It's a workshop. And I don't know, I know staff's time and constraints and everything like that, but I want to forward it to staff and see if somebody, if it's something that certainly they might want to participate in. It's the a Guide to Climate Change Vulnerability Assessments, obviously with the, and maybe you're already on it and a part of it, and I just don't know if that's something we participate in as staff. Or
we are aware of that, and we're going to try to participate. I'm not sure. Susan Hanch is the lead on coordinating our climate change activities, so I just don't know if somebody's going to be there.
Great. Thank you. I just wanted to make them aware of it. Thank you so much.
All right. There is no conservancy report. There hasn't been one since last month. Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy, has there been a meeting? Mountains, that's Commissioner Bloom. The Bay, have you had a meeting to report on for us?
We did have a meeting. Bay. Okay. I really don't have much to report.
Okay.
Thank you.
Deputy Attorney General's report.
Madam Chair, before the Deputy Attorney General's report and before too many people leave the room, I do want to remind everyone that you received notice of required ethics training. Those of you for whom ethics training is due, and so I do want to remind everybody to conduct their ethics training before the end of the year, and if you have any questions about it, you may please contact me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I have five items to report on today.
In Ross versus California Coastal Commission, the Court of Appeal denied rehearing and modified its decision to find that compliance with the 7-day notice provision for LCPs was reasonable and that courts should defer to the Commission's interpretation of its certified regulatory program. They made the decision even better. Kudos to Deputy Attorney General Wyatt Sloan Tribe on that one. And Wildman versus Coastal Commission, the trial court denied a writ challenging an offer to dedicate, finding that it was barred by the statute of limitations. Kudos to Deputy Attorney General Lori Perlman on that one. In Coastal Defenders versus California Coastal Commission, the trial court upheld a city action finding that no coastal development permit was necessary and that the commission had no obligation to compel the city to require a permit. Kudos to Jennifer Rosenfeld for that one. In Shrek versus California Coastal Commission, the Court of Appeal, in an unpublished decision, upheld the Commission's approval of a bunker house in Santa Cruz as consistent with the LCP. And congratulations to Joel Jacobs on that one. And finally, in Wetlands Defense Fund versus California Coastal Commission, the trial court upheld the Commission's approval of the restoration of Malibu Lagoon and lifted the preliminary injunction. And congratulations to Susan Austin of our Oakland office on that one. That concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The Executive Director's report.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. You do have a legislative report under the Executive Director's report in your packet. There aren't any recommended actions. It's just summarizing the status of various pieces of legislation that you've already had reported on. I did have a couple items to report. One is with respect to hiring and following up on the need to change my sign, which is, in point of fact, up until a couple of weeks ago, I actually was still the senior deputy director de facto. But I did want to report that I was happy to appoint Jack Ainsworth to the position of senior deputy director. I told Jack I wasn't going to report it till today and until I saw how yesterday went. But I am very, very, very pleased to have him in that role. He does have a lot of experience with us, as you know, and is going to be really valuable in helping us keep track of some statewide activities and also work on LCP process down in Southern California. And he's been with us for quite some time and knows our program very well, and I think works very effectively with all of our interested stakeholders. Related to that, we do have another vacancy to fill, and I just wanted to let you know that we are working as quickly as possible to deal with the chain of events due to the transition with the staff. And that does take some time. There, you may know there's a civil service process. In order to even make an appointment like Jack's, we needed to create a civil service list, and that takes a lot of time interviewing anyone who's eligible to apply. And so Susan Hanch and I have been spending quite a few hours doing that, but we're moving as quickly as we can to get us staffed up and as strong as possible. I also wanted to report on the local government workshop that I've mentioned a couple times over the last few months. We have been working with the local government working group that has been established, and they have requested that we have another workshop with local government, building on the one that we had in 2009. And hopefully some of you have had a chance to go back and look at that on the in the archive. But I wanted to just put that out on the table right now and see if there was any feedback or direction at this point. It's preliminary discussion. We are talking with the working group about trying to have a workshop sometime late spring, probably no earlier than April. But those are some of the logistics we're looking at, timing. In terms of the format, if you did go back and look at that workshop that we had, the format is unusual for us. It was a round table where we had 12 local officials sitting at a table with the 12 commissioners, and we had a dialogue about the issues at the time, mostly local government process. I would imagine that the format would be similar, so this would be a workshop where you were sitting at a table with local government counterparts that are interested and have been participating with us on various issues related to the coastal program. And at this point, that's the outlines of what I would anticipate happening. We do have some logistical things to think about with respect to that format and where we're meeting and what makes sense in terms of getting the right space to do that. In terms of the agenda, we've had preliminary discussions about building on the first workshop with respect to LCP process questions, but there seems to be pretty uniform consensus that this would not be the similar in the sense of an airing of, you know, why does the process not work as well as it should, but rather focusing on where we're headed and a productive product moving forward. And so we're working with the local government working group to figure out exactly what that would mean and how to focus that agenda on constructive, forward-looking process. We're also talking about having some topical item on the agenda. For example, there could be a discussion of sea level rise and LCP policies and guidance along those lines, which has been one of the concerns of everyone, that we move forward on guidance in that area, but it could be some other topic. And so that's what's on the table right now in our discussions, and I wanted to make sure you had an opportunity to weigh in now on anything in particular before we got too much further. I am going to the CSAC meeting on November 30th in San Francisco, and there'll be probably some discussion at that meeting with the counties that are interested in coastal issues. And then we are having another working group meeting on December 15th where the small group will get together and move this discussion forward. And I believe Shelley Higginbotham is going to join that discussion, so that's good. So I'll stop there, but see if there's any feedback or input at this point.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Yeah, I just want to thank Charles for staying engaged in that. I know that a lot of communities up and down the coast really are interested in doing more than just talking about what doesn't work, but actually looking at what we could do about it. So I appreciate that very much. And the only other, I think the coastal, the sea level rise issue is a very relevant topic, so I do support that. But I also think renewable energy issues could be something that would be of interest, and I just encourage you to give that some thought, whether it's wind energy or solar, larger industrial scale solar. Thank you.
Thank you. Good comment. Anybody else? I think I'm seeing mostly heads nod, agreement that this is a good thing for you to continue to work on, and thank you very much. And obviously, if people, if you have bright ideas or something you think is a bright idea, I'm sure Charles would be delighted to hear it via email or something. All right. Anything else, Charles, for the Executive Director's report?
No, I think that's it.
Okay.
We are in San Francisco next month.
Not until we hear five more speaker slips on children's pool. So we will go back to the public comment, and we have David Johnson, John Leake, Dan Burns, and Ken Hunras. If you'd all come forward, I don't care what order you come forward in, as long as we keep it moving along here.
Didn't sound like you really look forward to hearing the rest of us. I'm sorry about that. Not here to irritate you. Yeah, go. Get that going. My name is David Johnson. I've been swimming in these waters for many years, and you might wonder, what in the world are these guys here for today, bothering us? We're not here to bother you. You have a letter that's before you or in your pile or somewhere up here written by Deborah Lee. I don't know if you know this Deborah Lee, but it's from the Coastal Commission. It's a really great letter. We're glad that it was written. It mentions rope bear. We wouldn't even be here today if there was a La Jolla city. It's not a La Jolla city. The town council of La Jolla has never been listened to by the city council of San Diego, and as a result, there is a rope barrier. All those beautiful seals there, they are there, and we're there, and everybody's in harmony. But there are people who want that beach closed down, and the city is working with them and has done so for some time. Unfortunately, like I say, we wouldn't be here if the La Jolla Town Council had been listened to. They did not want this rope barrier. The city council pushed it through because there's only one member on that town council, Sherry Leitner. She didn't want this rope. But you got us up here and all this mess because the town council doesn't listen to La Jolla. and the people that know about this beach. Look at these seals. They don't care we're there. We want access to this beach, and that's why we're glad you have determination and you have jurisdiction over this beach. The city of San Diego has not managed that beach properly, the trust improperly. Judge Pate ruled so from the Superior Court that they have been, well, they were judged against because they were not working according to the trust. We have optimistic hopes that you, the Coastal Commission, will care about access to the ocean and this beach, that it shouldn't have a rope because all it does, it's a barrier. It, one, discourages people from coming to the beach, and then the activists yell, get in people's faces because they say, see that rope? You shouldn't even be on this beach, but if you are, be on this side. And then they'll yell and talk people off the beach. That barrier is a barrier from use of the ocean, which we feel you, as the Coastal Commission, will have sensitivity to. And I've definitely been on that beach year-round, and all that rope has done has caused conflict, confrontation, and given the activists reason to cause incitement. And like I say, this letter, which you will hear more about, is great because it puts you in charge of this beach, because the city has nothing to do about telling people they can't access the ocean, or at least put a rope up that appears as though when you walk down there, it says, hey, this place must be closed. There's a rope. But anyway, there is harmony on that beach because people and seals can get along and do get along. Thank you.
Thank you very much. John Lee. And I see Marie Hoonrass.
Hey, we're trying to bring you totally new stuff. And, like, we didn't know that you didn't know that you have complete jurisdiction over all of Children's Pool Beach. He's referring to that letter between the Coastal Commission and the city that happened in August. What I got to tell you about is the trust, because there is a state trust that governs that, and that's the reason you have the jurisdiction. You may not have ever seen this trust. It's right. You have a copy. The working parts are striped in yellow, shall be exclusively for public park, we got that, marine mammal park for the enjoyment and educational benefit of children. I told you how much the children like to swim at the seals. Bathing pool for children, got that, parkway, highway, check, playground, and recreational purposes and such other uses. Okay? This is not just a deal. It's a state law. It's an act of the legislature. Everybody in California has to uphold it. Now that you have full jurisdiction, so do you. Attached to the back of it is a Superior Court ruling, two of them actually, stating that a rope across the beach is a violation of that trust. Now, but what happened back here? A parkway and a highway. They're going to pave the beach? It's 200 feet wide. No. The lawyers that made this trust knew that they had to make sure the city would put up the stairs and the sidewalk and even build a road out to there, because it was a forlorn place. So they knew that they only had to add parkway and highway as one of the stipulations of the trust, because they knew, as I know that some of you know, a trusted land grant brings with it its terms impressed upon the easement to that land grant. That easement is the sidewalk and the street and the stairs. You have complete jurisdiction and control and responsibility for upholding the trust on the stairs and the sidewalk. That's the bad news. So that the statement of the court in 2008 was, of course, the biggest. Both courts found the placement of a rope barrier cutting off public access to the pool, along with other restrictions, served to deter the public beneficiaries of the trust grant from using the beach, which resulted in the city's breach of its obligations as trustee under the trust. That violation of the trust is now in place permanently, but the city got you to do it for them, so they won't get sued again. Okay, I'll let my friend Ken go over with you the admonition that trust brought you full jurisdiction and responsibility for the children's pool. Under that part, the new boundary, the potential new application should be, the beach is located on historic tidelands and submerged lands that have previously been subject to public trust. So that's what I'm talking about. That's the bad news. Thank you.
Thank you. Dan Burns or Ken Hoonross, either one.
Good morning. My name is Ken Hoonross. If you could start my PowerPoint, please.
Sorry, you need to put your name on the record.
Ken Hoonross.
Thank you.
But the notion of public access being restricted by a pattern of behavior, that certainly is something that we should be concerned about.
That's fine. That's just a repeat of that video you saw earlier. Director Douglas expressing concern about the pattern of harassment and the behavior that goes on down at Children's Pool. Over the last couple of days, we've shown you some videos and exposed you to some of the activities that go on down at the pool. And we've come to you with this plea to ask for your help to protect our right to coastal access at Children's Pool. We showed you clear examples of the harassment citizens are subjected to every day at Children's Pool. The rope barrier is a tool used by extremists to harass and confuse visitors and to drive them away from this beach. An identified coastal access ramp is closed, hindered emergency access. It's hindered SeaWorld rescuing animals. That needs to be corrected. When local authorities fail in their duty to protect citizens' rights to coastal access, where do we turn to for help? Who do we go to? We think it's probably the Coastal Commission. Can you back up one? City of San Diego is about to dump one of its biggest headaches on you in the form of this children's pool issue. You will be asked to approve an encroachment to coastal access in the form of a year-round rope barrier. That's coming to you probably within a couple of months. You have a letter before you dated August 19, 2011 from the San Diego Area Coastal Commission office advising the city the rules have changed down at Children's Pool. And in part, that letter does say the entire beach is subject to the commission's original permit jurisdiction. As a result, any potential new application for a year-round rope barrier should be submitted to the Coastal Commission after it has received any necessary local discretionary approvals for the city. The City of San Diego is wasting no time dumping this unpopular and expensive project on the Coastal Commission. This is the permit posted up at Children's Pool. Yeah, it was posted up there the weekend, approximately October 19th or 20th. We believe the Children's Pool rope barrier is a violation of the Coastal Act. San Diego will soon be asking you to enlarge it and make it permanent. A bad idea. Think about the videos.
Thank you very much. Dan Burns. All right, another 3 minutes.
I'm done. I was just asking you to think back about the video you saw of the 4th of July activities down at Children's Pool. Imagine a rope barrier being stretched entirely across that beach. The hundreds of people that use that beach would be forced to step over, go around, go under that, and also endure the harassment of activists up on the sidewalk yelling and screaming downstream that they have no right to be there. They're harming seals. They're killing seals. You heard those statements being made in those videos. I ask you to keep that in mind when this comes before you in the next couple of months. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. That ends our public comment for today. And I believe the end of our agenda, and we'll see you all next month in San Francisco on the wharf. Thanks. Okay. Travel safely.